Thank you, Butch, and it's always my pleasure to be invited, and it's always an exciting thing when a room full of people show up to hear me speak, so I don't take the privilege lightly. Well, it was August of 2001, and I had been in my new job almost 90 days. I was doing pretty good for somebody who was in a sales role, who didn't have any sales experience to speak of other than running my own business when I'd lived in Texas a few years before. And I didn't get the sales training I was promised or any of the training I was promised, and so I was meeting my goals. I was pretty excited. In fact, just the weekend before that, I had heard that a client that I'd been calling on was not just going to put 5 people in a class, they were going to put 20. That would exceed my goal that they had set for me in my first 90 days. I was pumped. Well, I walked into my office on that Monday morning, and my supervisor was there for the first time ever when I arrived in the morning, which was strange, but I thought maybe he's really excited about getting the day started, getting the week started. And he sits across from me and he says, "Carrie, we need to part ways." Really? To give you a little backstory, I was struggling in this job fundamentally. I was meeting my goals, but I was really struggling with the way they did business, the fact that they didn't do what they taught. And they were the kind of people that every time I hung out with them, because we had to travel back and forth from Little Rock a lot and do business meetings and things like that, just wanted to wash my hands afterwards. And I had been in an MBA program, and I had a couple of classes that I needed to finish up, and I had to drop out of my MBA program because I couldn't get those classes done or attend the classes on a regular schedule because they like you to be there. They knew about that before they hired me, but then proceeded to schedule over things. It was like they didn't want me to succeed, and my supervisor sold spots in class out from underneath me, and I would have to go back and talk to the client that I had just written the contract for and explain the situation. That happened 3 times. It was embarrassing. So I was struggling, and I thought, how quickly can I get out of this job? But I was going to meet my goals. So when he says, "Carrie, we need to part ways," I thought for a minute, tried to think of something witty, and it didn't come. And I said, "Okay, that's that." And so I packed my things, and I went home, and I was more confused than ever. I didn't understand what had happened, except the fact that he was going to get the sales commission on 20 spots in class. That made me a little mad. But I packed my things up and went and laid down on the bed and just licked my wounds for a little bit and thought, well, what the heck am I going to do now? I left a great job. I was vested. I would never have left my corporate job had I known that that was what was going to happen. Who knew? I thought this job truly was the brass ring, the one that God was calling me to leave my corporate job for. I learned that sometimes the brass ring isn't the brass ring at all. Sometimes it's the thing that made you leave so you could have the brass ring. And that's what happened to me. Later that afternoon, my advisor's assistant emailed me and she said, "Carrie, we've got a class starting this weekend. Are you going to be part of it?" Well, I hadn't done the classes that I was supposed to do, and the semester was about to start, and I didn't have the books. I ordered my books online. What was I going to do? So I emailed her back, "Sue, give me 2 hours and let me see what I can do. If I can get enrolled in those classes I need, can I come back?" And she emailed me and said yes. So I got enrolled, got my books ordered, and I was in class that Friday night. I didn't know until that Friday night that if I had not started in that class that night, I would not have been able to get back in the program for a year. Tell me about God's timing. Suddenly, I saw a plan. Amongst all the confusion, things fell into place over that. I realized that I was supposed to be home taking care of my newly blended family that was starting to pull apart, because that's just a complicated situation. I was raising a daughter that was struggling with mental illness, and she was a teenager. I needed to be home, and so I got to spend a couple of years just volunteering. It's where I started coaching with GORE, that provides small business counseling for free, and I got involved in the community, and a couple of years later, I got a chance to start my business. do you know I make a bigger difference in people's lives today than I ever dreamed of making when I worked for that little training company? Who knew? We just don't know what this transition time is going to provide for us. Now, one of the things that I noted that was so important during that period of time and when I ran my business back in Texas was networking. And so that's what we're talking about today, about conversations that we have in networking, because that really is where the rubber meets the road. Now, you might remember maybe 10 years ago, everybody said you had to have a mentor if you were going to go anywhere in your career. They were a great way to get feedback, get ideas for what next steps in your career, but I would submit to you that the power that the mentoring relationship really brought was the network. The more you met with your mentor, the more they trusted you and the more likely they were to be able to refer you, because they knew your needs more and they knew who you needed to talk to and they could help open doors for you. So networking is important to your career, but here's some really good evidence. Fred Luthens, who's a management professional who specializes in organizational behavior, says that 80% of jobs are landed through networking. He conducted a study of 450 managers that engaged in four basic behaviors: traditional management, communication, human resources management, and networking. He divided those 450 managers into three basic groups: average managers, effective managers who were defined in terms of quality and quantity of their performance and satisfaction and commitment of their employees, and successful managers who were defined in terms of speed of promotion within the organization. And the findings challenged our historical notion about promotion based on performance. The findings prove the importance that social and political skills play in getting ahead in the organization. Among successful managers, networking made the largest contribution to their success. Ladies and gentlemen, this isn't just about getting a job. It's about progressing in your next job to fulfill whatever that purpose is and that next level calling for you. The beginning of last year, in the training industry, Walmart laid off 1/3 of their training force. That number I estimate to be about 30 to 35 people. There were four jobs related to training that any of those 35 people could possibly have. There weren't enough jobs for them all. Well, Bill Luce was one of the first people to show up at our training association meeting the next week after the layoff. Every time I went out to lunch or went out, met somebody for coffee, there was Bill Luce talking with somebody that he used to work with, somebody that he was connected to within the industry. He was out all the time. He helped spearhead the Job Searcher Initiative at his church, and he helped create the programming for that. Do you know that Bill Luce was the first person of those training professionals laid off to go back to work? And in fact, he just got a next level offer from somebody he used to work with at Walmart when she moved to the community college. And he stayed connected. He didn't just go get his job. He stayed connected. And possibly those connections were already there from the previous job search. It was a great job that he got. And this next job, it's an exciting move for him. So the ramifications are endless for being able to build your network and keep it active. This is probably preaching to the choir, but the time to build your network is before you need it, right? Wouldn't you rather have had some people connected inside now that you're out? I know I kick myself every day that I didn't keep in touch inside Walmart like I should have, because now I kind of like to call on some of those departments. And even though people move around all the time, that would have been a really nice thing for me to be able to have a friendlier conversation rather than now it's a sales call. Now it's a cold call. So keep those leads warm. Well, one of the most important things that we do when we meet somebody new is to make a confident first impression, right? I think it's incredibly hard still, even when I walk into a room for the first time, it is a little scary. Here I'm among friends. Many of you have seen over the years. I know from the community activities I'm involved in. But there's sometimes when I walk into a cold room, I don't know anybody, and that's when skills will help you. It allows you to have an agenda and a technique and templates to work with. when you're walking into those rooms so that you can meet your agenda. Like when I walk into a room, my goal is to meet 5 new people before I settle in and talk to people that I already know. We can stay home. Isn't staying home much more fun than networking? I know it is for me. I'd just rather stay home. I have a busy life. But I don't meet new people that I can help connect to other people if I don't. Can connect me to my next clients. I mean, my next step in the community. I don't know what networking is going to do for me. But if I stay home, I'm probably not going to meet anybody new. So I do set goals when I go into an event. Now, sometimes people will tell me, Carrie, you don't understand what it's like to be shy. And you're in front of groups all the time. You don't understand. Well, let me tell you, I used to be the poster child for scared public speakers. So I remember almost passing out at a manager training thing. I envisioned that I was going to stand in front of this group and deliver this information about my department to these store managers. And it was nothing like that. I think they were looking at me kind of scared, thinking I was probably going to pass out. You know, I got the rashy neck and all that stuff. I just decided that I still was going to go up there and try. That grew me probably more than any other experience I had, and it made me decide I was still going to go try and get in front of groups and keep doing that. So somebody told me one time that the difference between a good speaker and a great speaker is 500 speeches. I've got 150 more to go. So it's a game of numbers, just like sales. But I do have to tell you that there was this one experience that kind of changed everything for me and how comfortable I felt in front of a group and meeting somebody one-on-one. I was speaking to a group of business owners at a small business development center seminar. Well, I gave them my best 10 minutes of wisdom about running a small business and answered a few questions, packed up my things, and came back to my office. Well, I was returning some phone calls, talking to my friend Teresa, and I looked down and went, Teresa says, Carrie, what's wrong? Teresa, you're not going to believe what I just did. I just gave a talk to a group of small business owners with a yellow dry cleaning label pinned on the inside of my navy blue jacket. Well, Teresa assured me that my life was not going to end and that there's a possibility that they didn't even see it. Well, I finished my phone calls and went to the ladies' room and realized something else. My pants had been unzipped as well. Every time I get in front of a group, I check my fly and think of that story, and it just sort of lightens the mood for me. Because we're all alike, really. We all get nervous. But I do want to give you 8 tips for making a confident first impression. The first tip is to smile, a warm, engaging smile. Not the Cheshire Cat grin, but something that makes somebody want to be around you, something that makes you look authentic. I don't know if any of you do this, but when I see somebody I haven't seen in a really long time, I'm trying to listen to them, but all I can think of is how long it's been since we've met, and then how many pounds I've gained or lost, or how much more gray hair I have today. I can't pay attention to what they're saying. So I realized, though, one day that when I smile, their eyes never go below my chin. So I don't have to be self-conscious about that anymore, right? But that leads me to my next tip. Make eye contact as often as possible. Eye contact in our culture equates to trustworthiness and respect. Now, you might know some people that look down when they are listening to you, right? 25% of our folks are auditory learners. And what this means is that when they're looking at you, they can't pay attention as easily because there's all this visual stimulus of your facial expressions and what's going on around you. When they are looking down, they're actually listening to you harder. Now, doesn't that clarify some things for you? But just because you know that, hardly anybody else is armed with that piece of information. So if you are one of those auditory learners, as I am, work on being able to make eye contact when you speak to people. Even if it isn't for the whole time, at least do it when they're talking. So it shows that you're paying attention and you're listening. My next tip for making a confident first impression is to extend a firm, full palm handshake. What are you thinking when you get that wet fish handshake? How quick can I get to the hand sanitizer? You're not paying attention to what that other person is saying, are you? And that little olé handshake that comes from a guy, you're not thinking they mean business. or there's that bear hug handshake that huge people give. If you don't know what your handshake is like, ask somebody. You may think, oh, nobody's going to tell me that, but my friend Tom Jones tells me that everybody has a broccoli friend. That broccoli friend is that person who will tell you when you got that piece of broccoli stuck inside your teeth, right? They're going to be honest with you about your handshake. Ask them and find out what it is that you need to do to correct that, because you don't want people to be totally distracted by your handshake when they need to be listening to the conversation and engaging in the conversation. My next tip is to get an attitude. And I'm not talking about your teenage daughter's attitude. I'm talking about a winning attitude. People hire a winner, do they not? Are they hiring a wet blanket who's all crabby about the economy and how much it's terrible? What a tough time we're having and how terrible the weather is and all of those other things that we use to make conversation. Have a winning attitude, because those are the kind of people that get employed more quickly. My next tip is to stand tall. You breathe easier. Breathing is good, especially when you're meeting somebody new. Helps your brain function. Your clothes hang nicer. And speaking of clothes, dress so that you feel confident. For some of us, that means that we need to dress a notch or two above everybody else. For other people, it means that they need to be dressed like everybody else is dressed in the room to feel comfortable. Whatever that means for you, do it so that you're not so conscious about what it is that you're wearing when you go somewhere and when that moment counts. And the truth is, there's lots of moments that happen that count that we weren't planning for. Even with on the trip to buy groceries on Sunday morning at Walmart. You never know. And sure, clothes are important, but nothing looks better on you than a fine set of manners. And that doesn't mean being stuffy and proper. It means being gracious. And sometimes the most gracious thing we can do is to be gracious with people whose manners aren't so good. And then finally, look organized. Does anybody feel challenged by this one? This is a hard one for me. But it's important that we be able to walk into the room without papers hanging out of our purse and our notebook. And that when people visit our desk, if they came by at work or at home, make sure your desk looks good at home. You may know where every single piece of paper is in that stack on your desk, but somebody's going to question whether they are going to be able to trust you with a lead or referral. Are you going to be able to take care of somebody whose reputation they value? So those are 8 tips for making a confident first impression. Well, at the end of the day, we want to be likable, right? I think that I value that. I mean that seems like a really silly, insignificant kind of desire to have for your life, but I want to be likable. I want to be liked. Well, you know what will make you more likable than anything else? The ability to make conversation with people, to take charge of that conversation and lead a series of open-ended questions. Not questions that are focused on, you know, closed-ended answers. It could be answered with just yes or no or a single word, but questions that have to be answered by the other person that lead to more questions, that gives you a chance to really unplug and listen to what they're saying. On your desk is 2 sets of questions. You look at the dark brown card. There is a set of a template that I teach in all of my programs called the Meaningful Conversation Template. And basically what it is a set of questions that are divided up in 3 areas that you can ask just about anybody with some modification, anybody, anywhere, even funerals. So funerals, weddings, all those family gatherings where you don't make conversation often enough because it just doesn't seem like the right thing to do. These are a great set of questions to get you information that are going to take you to that next step in that conversation. Well, they're divided up in 3 areas. The first area helps you get to know the person and what it is that they do. The next set helps you learn more about their organization. And then the next set helps you get to know them personally. Now, the value in these questions, even if the conversation never turns back around to you, is that you're finding reasons to follow up. Because what are you going to say when you call them the next time? You don't have anything if you don't have something that you found in common, or next step, or found something that they're interested in. Now, the first set of questions do allow you to know if you're getting closer to a decision maker, or, you know, what their role is. Now, I would tell you to treat everybody like a decision maker. Sometimes in sales, we're real fussy about who we consider to be a decision maker. I've worked with enough big companies to know that administrative assistants have high levels of influence. So always assume, whether they have a title on their card or not, or whatever their title is, that they are a decision maker and that they're influential. Because they may have a huge network inside their company and be a totally influential person just because they know the right people. That's important. Would somebody like to demo this with me? Okay, I would love for somebody that I don't know at all to come up and demo this with me. All right. Joe, right? Okay. All righty. Joe, I really appreciate you doing this. Just let's give him a hand right now. First step of bravery. Joe, I'm Carrie.
I'm Joe.
Joe, what do you do?
Well, I work at Lowe's as a front end loader.
Okay. So how long have you been there?
I've been there about a year and a half.
Really? What did you do before that?
Well, before that, I was a waterer in outside Gordon.
Okay.
And after that, they moved me inside, and I'm a facilitator, which means I clean the store, the bathrooms, and all that stuff.
Wow, I value that function in a store, so,
yeah,
as a customer. So, wow, exciting. Well, what brings you here?
Well, actually, they've cut my hours back.
Okay.
And I'm working 16 hours, 2 weeks, like 16 this week, 16 next
okay.
week. And it's just, like, getting really tight as far as my financial business.
Exactly.
My financial goes. So I'm basically looking for a second job to kind of bounce me back up onto my feet.
Nice.
Until I try to find either a full-time job or they start increasing hours or whatever or something.
Okay.
So
what would you like to do? If you were at your ultimate job, what would you like to do?
Well, actually, I have a bachelor's degree in business management, which is what my long-term goal is.
Okay.
A long-term goal is to become a manager somewhere. Like either at a retail store or someplace. That's basically what I went to school for.
Right.
Management.
Right. So are you thinking about moving to a bigger market? Because Northwest Arkansas is kind of small.
That's basically what I wanted to do.
Okay.
With whatever company or business I'm in.
Uh-huh.
Is I wanted to start at a job and then basically move on up the ladder. Like start at assistant management to begin with. And then basically become a manager eventually, because that's the reason I got the bachelor's degree from Belhaven College in Mississippi.
Okay.
Anyway.
Well, excellent. So if I were looking for a type of retail establishment, mm-hmm. do you have any in particular that you were interested in?
Well, basically customer service and sales.
Okay.
Is basically what I focus on. I'm pretty good with customers. I'm a people person.
Okay.
I'm a little shy at first, but
that's okay.
But then I warm up to people after I get to know them.
Okay. Well, I'll keep an eye out. So have you always lived in Northwest Arkansas, or?
No, actually, I'm originally from Virginia, and I've lived in Texas for a while. Then we lived in Louisiana and uh-huh. Mississippi, and then Arkansas.
Wow, you traveled around a lot. How come you traveled so much?
My dad kept getting different jobs.
Okay.
He kept getting different jobs, and the reason we moved to Arkansas is my parents had a house built here, and they owned their own business. So.
Well, exciting. So you'd be okay with.
It's impossible for me to live here and work in Mississippi because it's like 500
so
miles
you'd have to
back
relocate.
And forth. I mean, that'd be like a 1,000-mile commute, and that's pretty long distance. So.
Yeah.
Plus, where I live right now is very close to where I'm working. So.
Which is nice, isn't it? We get spoiled here.
It's hardly, was it one, maybe 3 minutes from where I live. Because I live in these apartments, like say right here, these would be the apartments right here. I live about right there.
Oh, wow, that is close.
Yeah.
Wow. So are you, what do you do for fun here?
Well, actually, basically what I do for fun is I don't get out very much. I probably should get out more, but basically I stay at home.
Okay.
And I basically play games on the computer and watch TV if there's anything on.
Have you ever thought about volunteering?
Somewhere,
half the state's nonprofits are right here in Benton and Washington County.
Oh, okay. Well, I should consider that because I am new and I would like to sometime get out and try something like that and make a difference. Because I'm one of these people who likes to make a difference with people, because I took one of these tests at church one time.
Uh-huh.
And it told me the top three qualities about myself are mercy, which means I care about people. And my faith is very strong. And I'm a helpful person, too. I care about people, and I'm helpful to people. So volunteering or something like that would be a good fit for me, too.
It's a great way to build your resume, too. Mm-hmm. I know, just personally, I think my volunteer resume is much more impressive than my corporate resume ever was.
Yeah.
So it's a great opportunity. Well, Joe, thank you for being a volunteer today here. Here's your first volunteer opportunity. Do you have a card, just in case I meet somebody who needs to know about you?
A business card?
Yeah.
Well, I really don't actually have one. I can pretend I have one.
Okay. That's a great step, of course. Okay. Well, I'm going to give you this one back.
Okay.
But, well, thank you very much. But anyway, it was a pleasure to meet you. Mm-hmm. And give them
nice
a hand.
To meet you too, Carrie.
So. Now, Joe's got a red badge, and so I can't even begin to ask you guys if you know anything about him that you didn't know before, because you probably, anybody met Joe before? So Joe's new. Do we learn a lot about Joe? Do you think if we had this conversation with all kinds of people that we would learn more about them? And now I've figured out all kinds of ways to follow up with Joe. I know where to find him. So anyway, it's really helpful. You never know when you're going to need that kind of information. Okay, for being such a willing participant, I'm going to give you a choice of three books. We have Wise Words for Smart Teens, The Teenager's Guide to a Great Future. We have, if you like motorcycles, we have a book called Shattered Mosaic by the poet, Sharpie the Biker Poet. My best friend's husband. So, and then a book called Sink or Walk on Water, Understanding and Coping with Life Storms.
This one might fit me better.
There you go.
Because I'm having troubles anyway, so this might help me.
There you go. So, well, thank you for being a participant. So, all books out of my publishing house. I publish books for speakers, which is like the coolest thing I think I get to do. Working on a book for an astronaut right now. How awesome is that? I've never even met an astronaut. There's not like there's a lot of them. So, anyway, it's really exciting stuff. All right, let's talk about building your network for a minute. Where are you guys networking now?
LinkedIn.
Where?
LinkedIn.
LinkedIn. Where have you been networking face-to-face?
Women in networking.
Women in networking, that's where I've seen you. So I was like, you look really familiar. where else?
Toastmasters.
You know, just last week I didn't even know Don was looking for a job. How many times have I been going, been in the same room with him until I had a conversation? I stopped him and said, so what do you do? Well, I'm looking for a job. I had a lead for him immediately. So, where else are you networking?
My old work.
I'm sorry?
My work.
At work?
Old work.
Your old work.
Yes.
Talking to people that you used to work with.
Yes.
That's really, really important, because especially if you're thinking you might go back to that company, you'll want to keep those relationships warm, because they might think you got a job and you're not looking anymore. Or that it's the perfect job and you might not entertain coming back.
I won the Chamber of Commerce, and if you're not a business, it's only $25, and they actually give you a CD if often you want updated all the businesses and all the different owners and everything else with emails and phone numbers. So, but I try to go as many of those meetings as I can to just kind of let them know who I am and vice versa. But or just trying to help out.
Exactly. I found so many opportunities to help other people going to those that they can't help but return the favor. They're more likely to remember me when I've helped them. And you can't help somebody if you don't know how to help them if you're sitting at home in front of your computer. Not that there's anything against LinkedIn or Monster.com or those other things, but face-to-face is really where we connect as human beings. Mm-hmm. Bill?
The risk of being crass and controversial, political parties are pretty ripe at this time. About 30 days left to do some hard networking.
Exactly. So it gives you a few ideas, but obviously I didn't see a lot of hands go up and bragging about where they're networking and how great it is. This is scaring me. You need to get out and find some ways to connect with people.
Your church, the summit, the leadership conference that we'll have as sponsors.
And go early. The first 20% of any event is what I call the networking gold zone. If you walked in here at 9 o'clock today, you were late. We used to call that at Walmart time. You got to show up early, and because those are the people that have not yet connected to somebody that they're talking to. It's easier to go up and talk to a total stranger during that time. You feel much more comfortable because everybody's a little bit in limbo and a little bit uncomfortable. So, but excellent. But do make sure that you get out and do things. If you're not in a Bible study group in church and they have a Bible study program, get into a small group. You're more likely to connect with other people. Especially the smaller the groups are, the easier it is sometimes to connect to people. Sometimes people go, oh, there weren't very many people there. That's not a good place to network. Well, I think I can have better conversations and deepen the relationship a bit more in a smaller group sometimes. How many of you know what to say when you get that question in your interview? So tell me about why you were released from your last job. Is that like the number one most awkward question that you could possibly get if you've been laid off, your company closed, whatever? I mean, any time that it wasn't your choice to leave.
I just filled out an application, and I think it's important for us to answer this correctly. I got a question on Lowe's, when they're trying to get on Lowe's, and it says, have you ever been discharged? You really need to know what that company thinks about what discharge is. Laid off discharge, or is that the fact that they escorted you out of the door from inspection from stealing from the pit?
Uh-huh.
So I ended up calling to find out, no, you weren't discharged and you're laid off or something like that. It's somebody that really was, you know.
Wow.
And so how often do us try to fill out and say we've been discharged? We really haven't been discharged. You're really talking about people that really got fired, you know, that really are not a layoff type situation.
That's right.
Don't misanswer that.
Oh, my goodness. That's a great tip. Call and find out what discharged is. Because some of these online things, it's like check the box. You can't write beside, I was laid off, when you say discharged. So, who knew? But eventually, somebody is going to ask you that question in an interview, if they haven't already. And is it awkward? Here's what I recommend. I recommend that you get real with yourself on why you were discharged or just laid off or the company was downsized. You know, if it means, I mean, really reflect on this. Why am I not at that company anymore? Because you need to be able to answer this if you want to go back to work sooner than later, because you have to really believe this. And it can mean sometimes that the economy just changed and the company wasn't able to sustain what they were doing. It could mean that you ended up in a department that was vulnerable to the economy, and there wasn't another place for you to go because there were so many people like you on the market already. It could mean that it was just not a great fit for you. Sometimes people, you get your department shuffled. Anybody ever been around where they break your department up and shake it up and break it up and send different pieces off to other areas, and suddenly you're not doing the job that you were once doing, mm-hmm. and you're not good at it, or at least haven't had 20 years to get good at it.
They jump you around.
In the name of cross training.
I told you in that example, they did the same thing with me at Lowe's.
Exactly.
The outside garden, that's just wonderful out there. I loved it out there. And then they moved me inside to do all the cleaning and stuff.
Uh-huh. And that's probably a good fit for you, right? Well, and that happened my husband's been at Walmart for 27 years. That's happened to him 3 times. Mm-hmm. It's really scary. One of them, I thought he was going to get promoted to customer. I was not ready for him to come home yet. So I work at home. So anyway, but he's in a fabulous job now, but it was a little scary. And I thought, oh no, what does this mean? Because in Northwest Arkansas, sometimes it's hard to go into a job because it's a small market that pays as much as what you made before you were downsized. So I would suggest that you have that conversation with yourself. Say something that you're really going to fundamentally believe in your heart. I mean, we all want to say, because my company stunk or my supervisor was stupid. I mean, there's just all those things that we're thinking of that first 2 years. Separation from our job is like a divorce. It takes 2 years to get over that, too. We have to give ourselves time to heal, but no, we can't go back to work and find nobody's going to hire us until we own that piece. And that's probably the toughest question that you have. There's some other conversation that you can have within an interview. Folks, most of the people that we interview with are not degreed HR professionals with certifications. Most of them are managers, and they are not trained to know how to make conversation and ask the right questions. You give them a gap, they're going to say something that they probably shouldn't, that's against the law, or it's going to be an awkward question. Go into that conversation with some really good questions about the company. I mean, what do you want to know? They want to know that you're excited about the company. Ask some questions about, what's a big challenge for them? Ask that supervisor how long he's been with the company and how much, what's his favorite part of working for the company? Find questions to fill those awkward gaps so they can't ask the weird questions that are going to back you in a corner. The challenge for people who have to deal with those behavioral interviewing questions is that most people that have to ask those questions don't know what to do with them after they've asked the first question. The benefit of behavioral interviewing is really that it gives you a chance to go to that next level. You ask this person this question, tell me about a time that was challenging for you in your last job and how you handled that. Well, then they tell you about that. You're supposed to, next step, ask another question to go deeper in that. But what do? We make some notes and we ask the next question that's totally unrelated. It's a tool to give us a chance to be able to do that. Well, most managers don't know. So if we can go in with good questions on our own to make conversation, show that we're a likable person, remember, again, making meaningful conversation makes us more likable, they're more likely to see that we're interested and that we'd be a good person to work with, that we care. And it will allow you to ask enough questions to see if that's even a place you want to work. Last thing you want to do after going through this process is to not know that it was a bad fit when you went in. If I had asked a few more questions before I went to that training company, I'd probably still be at Walmart. So maybe that's probably a good thing I left. But, I don't know. But maybe it's a good thing I didn't ask those questions. But because I was so comfortable there, I would have stayed. I like the company. I like having benefits. I like having 3 weeks of vacation. I'd just gotten 3 weeks. So I was excited about that. So it kind of got me out of my comfort zone. Well, one of the things that we take into an interview with us every single time is our self-esteem. Anybody feel like their self-esteem's just rocking today? It's hard. This is a challenging time for you, especially when you've been on the market for a long time. Some of you I've seen around here for a long time. Would you make sure everybody gets one of these? What I'm handing around is a worksheet that we're going to work through as much as I can, but definitely it's designed so that you can take it home, and it will be available on my website after this. Sir?
Yes, Karen. One of the things I was taught in the role of interview is that normally when you come into the interview, you have some real hot points that show your capability of handling that position. And what I've been taught is do an open-ended question
in some of those weak points. Do you have any of these, this situation in your particular environment? So when you bring up that they say they do, then you can respond, but yeah, I had a similar situation, and here's how I handle it. So you can kind of input
nice.
What your background is to the position, and by asking it up front, if they ever have any of this, you find out if it's important to them or not. Oh no, we got Susie who handles that, so you never bring it up. So if you get a positive response, then you can bring in your little short story about that particular area. But that's just a, I don't know, somebody trained me that in Dallas, but it's just something that might get you through that. So you can bring in your little hot points if you feel you need to make sure you get across during the interview.
Right, right.
You can do an open-ended question to find out if it's important to them.
Right. Yeah, and it's a little bit difficult to answer questions and give people the information that they need when you know nothing about them, nothing about the job, because you haven't had enough conversation first. And so it really gives you a chance to make that conversation and drive it, to be able to know what you're supposed to tell them. All righty. Thank you for handing those out, too. And the early 1900s, 1902 in fact, Charles Horton Cooley conducted a piece of research that I think is very telling about how we view ourselves today and how it shapes our self-esteem. His research became known as the Looking Glass Self Theory, and basically what it says is that we base our view of ourselves on what we think other people think about us. Now, doesn't that seem silly? That's not, we don't even know for sure what they think about us. Here's what it looks like in real life, though. I walk into a room. I'm about to interview for a job that I'm so qualified for that I know that I'm going to get. I've got to be their most qualified candidate. And I'm so excited. This is like the best job I could ever have. Oh, there's the, that must be the hiring manager. I wonder why he's looking at me like that. You know, it's the last day. I bet he's already found his candidate. And maybe I'm not dressed right. I wonder if I wore the right clothes. You know, I don't see the assistant doesn't look like she's dressed like this. I don't know. I bet I'm not going to get this job. Probably not even qualified. How many times does this happen to us in real life? You know, we don't know why he had that scowl on his face. He might have gas. We don't know. I mean, it's just that ridiculous. He might just be going, oh my gosh, am I ever going to get out of this, you know, building today? You know, there's lots of people that, there's things going on in their mind that have nothing to do with us, but we automatically assume that it had something to do with us. Well, we have to start taking charge of creating our own personal truth, what we think that people should think about us. You know, if you have a question, ask. There's four steps to changing that. The first step is to stop making assumptions about what other people think of us. Ask what people think. And take their compliments to heart. When somebody gives you a piece of feedback, it requires an intense act of bravery on their part. Be thankful you got it and treat it with the loving care that it deserves. The next step is to create your personal truths as part of your goals that you review daily. Even when I have personal truths that I've achieved, I keep them on my goals year after year, because what happens when life happens? We take our eye off what has made us successful, because we're dealing with the emergency at the moment. If I have something up there that I've already accomplished, that I'm already doing well, it's still part of my vision for my life. And that's what personal truths are. They're the vision for your life, just like you'd have a vision for your business. This third step is to make them positive voice and action oriented. We replace bad habits with good habits. And so you have to write them as there's something that you currently do, or as if they're already happening. Or it's okay to say, I strive to do this. For instance, and here are some of mine. I base my decisions on principle rather than emotion. Here's one that I'm struggling with that's actually helping me out. I'm doing much better, but I return daily emails and phone calls before I spend time on Facebook and Twitter. So if you haven't seen me on Facebook much lately, it's because I'm returning a lot of emails that are related to new business. Yes! So, had to get a little bit excited. I have handed you a form that is designed for creating your own personal truth. And I'd like to walk you through that. And we're going to do one as a sample. But your personal truths can consist of four areas. And in this box up here, we have four types of questions. What are two things that you do really well? You might brainstorm this while you're doing it, but something that you do really well. Sometimes we're in such a state of brokenness because of the situation of our life, we don't know what we do well. We can't even imagine. We can't even be objective about ourselves. If that's you, go back and ask somebody who's close to you what you do really well. Talk to, if you're friendly with your former supervisor or coworkers, ask them what you do really well. There's a lot of times we have a competitive advantage and we don't even know what it is. We think it's something else that we should be marketing ourselves as, and in fact, there's this competitive advantage sitting out there that we don't know anything about. Go back to a work evaluation, a former work evaluation, if you have one. Another section is, what are two values you hold dear? And the other, what are two things that you consider necessities? If you had nothing else in your whole life, what would you consider those necessities to be? Doesn't have to be just two, but there's also a good reason to focus as well. And then what are two things you need to improve? Your personal truth don't have to be all about self-improvement. It could be about continuing on something that has already made you successful. But again, the truth is that we need to be able to change the self-talk in our head. A successful salesperson will tell you that the first sale you make is to yourself. And until you do, no one else buys. So that's what the purpose of this is. When you go through this exercise and write your own personal truths and you read them every day, I mean, print them out on your computer, or type them into your computer and print them out and then post them somewhere you're going to look at them every day. Maybe that's at your desk. Maybe it's in your closet where your clothes hang. You have to go in there to get dressed anyway. Read your personal truths every day. Now, some of you might be skeptical, and it is. It is just words, right? But there's something about creating the right syntax of the words that shape our success. When we read them more and more, they begin to sound like they could happen. And then suddenly we start to own them as that's something I need to do. And suddenly it starts to happen more and more that we do that practice, that we change that habit or something that makes the transition. So there are some examples down at the bottom. So say for instance, you know, a value that you hold dear. The value you hold dear would be doing the right thing. The personal truth would be, I uphold a solid moral and ethical reputation. Perhaps there's something that you're working on. Like for me, I am notoriously late if I am not showing up for a business appointment that is totally important to my revenue stream. Well, mine this year was that I was going to show up 15 minutes early for every appointment. I would like to announce to you that I am getting there 5 minutes early or on time every time now. I mean, that's a huge thing for me. Some of you probably that are very punctual people by nature probably don't relate to that, but for me it's a huge thing. It took me 9 months to get to that, but I'm proud to say that it's a little victory for me. So anyway, you've got some places to write, but I do want you, don't just tuck this away, put it in that stack on your desk with the other papers. This has been so powerful for me. I started doing it this last fall and realized, I'd done it for years, didn't realize what I was doing, and realized this year that that's what it was and how those things had defined my success. And how not doing them in some areas would have could have helped my success in some other areas. Now, for some people, they need a more visual type of approach. And for some of those people, that means doing a vision board. And that means pasting pictures together that look like the pictures of your life, what you want them to be. It might be the type of house you want, or the type of, you know, maybe you don't have children and you want some children, and here's a picture of three children. I mean, all kinds of things that you just go, this is what I want. Well, it keeps in front of you, and it helps you remember what you really need to ask God for. And sometimes it helps you understand that some things are frivolous, but He grants those prayers too sometimes, which is nice. That's why I have a Corvette. That was from God. It wasn't because I earned it. So. So anyway, but here's how this works out in real life, though. Rich Hopkins, who was based at the time in Spokane, Washington, he's a friend of mine on Facebook, his post in January of this year says, 3 weeks ago, Christy put up a picture of a house in Aurora, Colorado on our dream board. 2 weeks ago, I found out about a job in Denver without looking for it. Today, I have that job. Coincidence or being willing to trust God that He can give you what you want if you're willing to ask. Faith in God makes things miraculously appear. Sometimes He puts stuff on our heart. We don't even realize that was the desire of our heart or what was the next step. Sometimes that's how that picture ends up on the dream board. We never know where life is going to take us. But I do truly believe that it starts with getting out and having those meaningful conversations. And sometimes they start over the internet, and sometimes they start over Facebook. But get out and have those one-on-one conversations. Get out twice, and 10 minutes to go talk to somebody in your professional life, and have that 10-minute conversation at home. You'd be surprised how much difference that makes to have 10 minutes of meaningful conversation at home with someone we live with, and how often we don't. Those kids that live in the house with us, you know, if we don't have that 10 minutes of meaningful conversation with them, they'll go have it with their trusted advisors at school. And they are very wise, much wiser than we are. But they crave our attention. So whether they act like we know what we're talking about anyway, I'm living proof that I know that sticks eventually. And that sometimes you get the joy of having that repeated back to you when they're 21 years old and have a child of their own. When I worked for Walmart, I spent 4 years with the company magazine, and every month we would get articles from stores and clubs and distribution centers throughout the country. And we would open them all together, all 250 of them every month. And we would laugh and we would cry, and we'd read stories that we thought were funny. There was poetry. It's about Sam Walton building Walmarts in heaven. There was stories about managers having tricycle races in Action Alley. People would shrink wrap their store managers in the foyer until they raised enough donation for Children's Miracle Network. But there were life-saving stories, too. There were truck drivers who had pulled accident victims out of burning vehicles and saved their life. Or a demo lady at a Sam's Club saving a choking baby. But the story that burns in my memory like no other was the story of a night maintenance associate. He was on break one night with a fellow associate, and she was pouring out her heart about her husband's dire need for a kidney transplant. Now, beside the financial considerations, he was a tough match, and it looked like they weren't going to be able to find one in the limited time that he had left. Well, that night maintenance associate asked her questions about the process and how he was doing, and just really let her share the burdens of her heart. And I'm sure that she was able to go back that night, and she was able to finish her shift just a little bit easier. But that conversation caused that night maintenance associate to have some questions of his own. Over the next 2 weeks, he went to the doctor and had some tests done. And he found out something really amazing. He found out that he was a match for that woman's husband. Now, he could have done nothing, or he could act But I think you realize that he chose to act, and he donated one of his healthy kidneys and saved that woman's husband's life. Now, I don't know about you, but I'm pretty thankful that networking and having some 10-minute conversations is not going to require me to donate a kidney. However, that's how we find out what next step in our life is. That's how we figure out how we're connected to other people. That's how we find out how we do the things that create the fabric of our legacy. That's what I want for you. Forget that you're unemployed or underemployed for just a little while. And go have some conversations and see how God is going to have that chance to show you how he's going to use you on these next steps in your career. Thank you for allowing me to be here. Thank you.